Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour, hosted by Andy Malcolm. My name is David, and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only, but if you require assistance at any time, please key *01 on your telephone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist. I would like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded. Now I'd like to hand over to Andy. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Andy Malcolm, so I'm the Infrastructure Maintenance Delivery Manager for Wessex Inner. I'm standing in for Ivan today, who unfortunately couldn't make today's call. So this is the Wessex Safety Hour, 10th of January 2017. So I'm going to start with a bit of a run-through of the last week's stats, figures and incidents, and then we'll move on to a few other topics for discussion. So last week's safety hour attendance was a very high 82%, against 67%, which is really good. It was co-hosted by a new RMD, Becky Lumlock. We had 24 closed calls raised in the week, and the percentage of closed calls closed within 90 days was 79%. So last week was a very cold and icy week, which saw a number of staff accidents and incidents. So the first staff accident we had was a mobile operations manager who sustained an injury to the top of his leg when he fell over whilst attending to an incident in the Felton Junction area. Golden hour was applied, and the individual returned to work on the next shift. The next accident was a serious accident involving a member of Works Delivery staff. He was treating an icy patch within the delivery unit compound where he slipped and broke his upper right arm. So a golden hour was applied, and the individual still off work with a broken right upper arm humerus bone. So some good learning on this one. So the car park sections of the car park had been treated with grit. However, some sections haven't, and the individual slipped on a section that hadn't. It was a shared ownership compound. So there's definitely something there around where, you know, we've got a lot of locations across the network where we share ownership between departments, between, you know, HQ, Network Rail, South West Trains, maintenance and operations, etc. It's really important for all our kind of locations that we understand who's got ownership and who does the gritting duties when we've got snow, frost and ice predicted. So the next one was the staff accident in the Andover area on the outer. So a member of Salisbury Signal and Telecoms team slipped whilst attending to a signal post telephone. The individual slipped, put his hand out to stop his fall, but has unfortunately chipped a bone in his hand. The goal now was applied, and the individual had a number of days off work. We had a platform irregularity at Waterloo where a five carriage train was signalled on top of an 8-carriage train with the rear of the train overhanging the platform. No doors were released, and it was rectified by the signaller and the driver. We had a crossing misuse irregularity at Chertsey, where the signaller at panel 4 lowered some barriers, pressed the crossing clear with the person still in the level crossing. The signaller realised the error, but saw the person exit the crossing by climbing over the barrier. So there's some photos on the blog of the X-ray of the individual that suffered the slipstrip and fall on the Eastleigh Yard, breaking his arm, and also some pictures of the site. And from the site, you'll see there's a number of very icy patches in the shade. So as I said, definitely something for any location. You know, some of this is around all of us being vigilant as we're at our various locations. If we spot car parks, authorised walking routes, etc., that haven't been gritted in icy conditions. To make sure that we get it gritted, or we report it to make sure that we protect people from harm. So the other thing I'd like to mention is, so we have the rollout of the New Year Startup Brief, which started in the New Year. So everyone should be receiving a briefing or undertaking a briefing for those line managers out there to their respective teams to discuss how we can keep ourselves and others safe. Safe in the new year. Now we're all back for the Christmas break. It's really important that we capture the numbers involved, so we understand what our coverage is in terms of the brief. So please make sure that any numbers are fed back to the Wessex Safety Reporting or Pretty's team. So make sure that we're capturing the numbers of people that we're briefing, so we can understand whether or not it's been a success. So the next item I'd like to discuss. So on the blog, there's a video around risk-based commentary. So this is about, so there's a paper that's been produced by Helen Warlock and Laura Strange back in 2014 on the Anger Route, And it's around cognitive behaviour, behavioural interventions and track worker safety. That's a really good video. I'd encourage everyone to watch it and share with their teams. I don't intend to go through and describe the video. The video does a far better job of that. However, there is some background to this. So between January 2004 and June 2014, 30 incidents have led to fatalities among rail workers. So of these 30 incidents, 30% of these have been trackside workers who have been struck by trains. In every case, an underlying cause was a loss of attention or a lack of situational awareness. So following the jetted death of John Wright at Newark on the 22nd of January 2014, mates that held debriefing sessions with all frontline track staff. So during these discussions, track workers were told how they'd experienced near misses, come into contact with trains or witnessed others being struck by trains. In nearly all their accounts, they described how they'd been acting on effectively autopilot, for want of a better word. So forgetting where they were, being complacent, or not registering consciously on what was going on. They were unable to explain why they had acted as they had done. So these experiences mirror descriptions given by train drivers and track workers in accident investigations and formal inquiries. Drivers commonly state that track workers in these incidents acknowledge warnings, often with their back to traffic, but then inexplicably stay where they are, or move away but not too far enough, or actually walk back into the path of an oncoming train. So the video shows some practical examples of how risk-based commentary can increase situational awareness and prevent these types of incidents and a number of types of incidents. So a practical example of this would be something as simple as I want to walk down the track from one access gate to another location. I'm with a team of people. As I'm walking with this team of people on my journey in the CESS, I am alerting people to the dangers that are around them, such as watch that high ballast shoulder, mind that, watch that loose catch bit, etc., which raises everyone's awareness so everyone doesn't fall into the trap of the autopilot where I know I've got to get from A to B, but I almost switch off between A and B and then trip over something, or a member of my team trips over something. So a very simple example, but as I said, there's some very good examples within the video, including that of a lookout, etc. So I definitely encourage everyone to take a look at that video, discuss it with their teams. There's a number of applications for this, far and beyond, you know, frontline track workers. It's used on the continent for drivers, etc. with red signals. It's proved very, very effective in Japan for drivers over there. So as I said, please watch the video. Please share it with your teams. It's very, very good and very, very powerful. So that's all I intended to go through on today's call. But I'll be really interested if there's any feedback or any questions on any of the topics I've talked through, or any of the material, or indeed anything on any topic really related to safety. So if we just want to see if there's any questions, David.
Thank you. So ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please key star then one on your telephone keypad, record your name, then press the hash key. If you'd withdraw the question, just key star two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. So just remind you, it's star one on your telephone, record your name, then press the hash key. Thank you. You have a question from the line of...
Dave Sturgis.
Please go ahead, thank you.
Hello, Andy, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you, not too bad. Andy, just one thing I wanted to pick up on. From my time as IMSM down at Eastleigh, our team had a process in place whereby we would proactively look at the forecast. If there was any danger of any ice or snow, we would actually bring somebody in to sort the issue before the issue became an issue, if that makes sense. So we didn't react to it. We kind of looked at the issue coming up, and we put mitigation in place to stop that happening. Just wondering, within the Novo reorg, has that kind of got lost, and is that anything that we should be maybe doing a little bit better across the route?
I think that's a really good point. So we hold a lot of things operationally when it comes to poor forecasts and extreme weather. So I think definitely start, you know, safety should be a consideration in terms of workforce safety and location safety. I'm aware that there's a number of sites which do get gritted every time that the forecast is poor. I'm not aware of why in this case it seems seemingly failed down at Eastleigh on this occasion. But I think we can all kind of reflect on that, and I think it's down to all of us to sort of take ownership of it. And if it's something that's wrong, you know, that we make sure someone's aware of it, so we can kind of put preventative measures in place.
There are no other questions at this time, but just to remind people, you can star then one on your telephone, record your name and press the hash key. Thank you.
Right, so when I learned to drive in the Met Police, we had to do risk-based commentary during the driving course, which was 3 weeks. And as we were driving, we had to identify all the hazards and risks associated with driving and what we were going to do about it. So, do you think that has any relevance in this organisation?
Well, the answer to that is yes, as I've briefly kind of touched on. I think the thing around, you know, risk-based commentary can be, you know, it's around whether or not you're with a group or you're on your own. It's around avoiding you going into that, you know, that autopilot, for want of a better word. So, be it driving, be it, you know, walking down the track, it's all very much the same thing. You know, I drove to work this morning. I can't particularly remember anything particular about that journey. So, as you would say, that for part of that journey, I've probably gone into that kind of autopilot mode. Whereas you totally avoid that by almost prompting yourself constantly by coming on hazards like there's a pothole, there's a pedestrian, it's all. Yeah, I think it's entirely relevant. So, outside of work at home, etc. I think it's all around stopping you from going to that autopilot, because you know once you go into that autopilot that things can happen.
Yeah, so I think in the material and the video, it talks about when you verbalise something, you've got a feedback session, because it goes straight back into your ear, so audio feedbacks and maintains your awareness. So even if you were cooking a Sunday roast, you could use it, wouldn't you, effectively?
Effectively, and where track workers are at risk most is around when that activity involves not a lot of activity. So either lookout sat on their own, you know, observing trains and blowing a warning when a train sounds. You know, there are a number of fatalities involving lookouts that sound the warning, acknowledge the train, and then seemingly come into contact with it. You know, the whole thing around risk-based commentary is that person is keeping themselves alert by going through a process of alerting them to risks and what they should do, and there's a train coming, I need to step back, etc., etc.
Right, so in terms of working in substations and isolations, and the reason that's important is Kenton. So there's a big Kenton flashover. Yeah, there were three people in there, I believe. So if they had verbalised what they were doing in Kenton substation, that would have been an automatic feedback mechanism to stay on top of all risks.
Yes, yeah, because it's easy. So hindsight, they've been talking themselves through the process of racking out and working on the circuit breaker, and you know, part of that would have been, you know, actually around the rear of the cabinet to put the gear on. Am I actually on the right part of the substation? So you could say that yeah, it would help with an instance of that nature, because everyone as part of that team would be talking through the instance and the various hazards of what's live and what's isolated and all that sort of stuff.
Right. Okay.
It's probably particularly valuable in areas where, you know, we do work that requires an isolation, but we don't have an isolation of the entire area. So you might have two lines that are live, we might have two lines that are blocked and are not live. We could have staff that are dealing activity on the lines that aren't live, but they may be out there for four or five hours.
Yeah.
How do they kind of keep themselves, you know, constantly aware that actually the two lines next to them are actually in fact live? Because we've seen incidents, particularly the third rail
across the southeast, where individuals have come into contact with the third rail, having been working in a possession and have either strayed or not, their activity hasn't taken into account the fact that the third rail is live in that location. So by having that, by having a kind of rigorous brief and then the risk-based commentary, which is sort of consistently, keeping up on the pace of where the risks are and what's live and what's not,
you
almost put a second layer of protection in for people not to make a mistake, because they're constantly aware of their surroundings rather than just, concentrating on the kind of activity of packets of sleepers, etc.
Right, okay. And the last comment would be, so signalers and signal boxes. What do you reckon?
So there's definitely some value there. So signals, undertake protection activities and signal activities, etc. That require a degree of concentration. We've seen that the incident with the level crossing being there, with someone trapped within. There is a thing there around talking yourself through what you're doing. They work, signals commonly work alone. It's really important that there's a big opportunities here by adopting this. We can prevent those sorts of incidents, possession irregularities potentially, etc. In terms of the signalers talking through what they need to do, because they have a lot of going on at the same time, so they need to be aware of what they've done, what they haven't done, etc.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
So is there any further questions on the line, David?
There are no questions at this time.
Okay, so I'll bring this to a close then. So thanks to Dave Sturge and Tracy Capstick for prompting the discussion. And everyone has a safe and safe and productive week. And the safety hour will be back on again next Tuesday. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining. Have a very good day.